I have really enjoyed Hebrews. We're not near through, but this has been such a good book for me. I probably enjoyed preaching through Galatians as much as most books, but Hebrews has really been challenging for me. I've spent a lot of time on it, probably more than I've ever spent on any book that we've been through trying to study. Because there's just something seemingly in almost every verse that is critical to your really understanding the book. I didn't know nearly as much about Hebrews as I should have. I really had never done such an in-depth study on the book before. I had read through it quite a number of times and certainly had preached from some passages in it. But you don't hear Hebrews dealt with as a whole book very often. You may hear a verse here and there preached, but rarely ever is the entire book dealt with. And I think it's been a great benefit to us. And it just seems to get better and better as you begin to look at the superiority of Christ. And that's really what the book is about. You know, as we were going through Sunday school this morning, and Lance was teaching there in Acts 21, and you know, he walks into the Jews who still seem to be struggling a little bit with some of those old traditions and some of the law and whether those things were around. You know, oh, Paul's telling people to forsake the law and all. I mean, I think Lance put it very well this morning. We said there was just a transition period that the law was laid aside and Christ took over. Now, it should have been cut and dry, but we're just not that way as humans. I mean, that's just not how it works. Jews were well steeped in the Old Testament and in the law, and then they were taught from a young age that those things were vital and that they should keep them forever. And somehow they got the idea that the Old Covenant was the covenant and that there'd never be another covenant. That's where they erred. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is dealing with in this book. He's saying, look, there was always a plan for a new covenant. Always a plan. And the Old Testament talks about that. How did you miss it? And as we get into to today's lesson, you need to look back on that, those foundational truths of the order of Melchizedek, that there was a better order of priests than that of Aaron, and it was the order of Melchizedek. And that's where Jesus came in that order, you know. But he laid out so many important qualifications for a priest in the previous chapter. The old priests couldn't meet any of those qualifications. They needed to offer one sacrifice that did it all. They never did that. He'll deal with that more, by the way, as the book goes on. They need to live forever. None of them did that. They kept dying off and had to be replaced. They needed to offer sacrifices in a certain place. We'll deal with that today. They didn't. They didn't do that. You see, they had all these shortcomings as priests, and yet Jesus fit the bill perfectly. And that's what he's dealing with today. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 1. Now the point in what we are saying is this. We have such a high priest. Here's what we need. He's dealt with that. And we have such a high priest. One who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, a minister in the holy places, in the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices. Thus it is necessary for this priest also to have something to offer. Now if he were on earth, he would not be a priest at all, since there are priests who offer gifts according to the law. They serve a copy and shadow of heavenly things. For when Moses was about to erect the tent, He was instructed by God saying, see that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is as much more excellent than the old as the covenant He mediates is better since it is enacted on better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. We'll stop there. I almost covered this entire chapter today. I think you probably could. But I want to deal with that long quote out of Jeremiah 31 next week, just so we can make sure we don't leave any stone unturned. You say, one sermon in one chapter? You just took you four to get through Hebrews 7. You know, right. Well, you know, chapters are different. Now, the point in what we are saying is this. Everything He has built up to so far, He now deals with the main point of the teaching about the order of Melchizedek and the priests or the priesthood of Jesus. He is not giving a summary. He's already given a summary. He is dealing with the chief point, the main thing. We need a priest, and none of the Old Testament priests fit that bill. It says in the 28th verse of the previous chapter, the law appoints men in their weakness as high priests. That's what we had in the law. But the word of the oath, I swear you will be a priest after the order of Melchizedek. God swore. But the word of the oath, which came later than the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. Now the point we're saying is this, we have such a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven. Nobody would ever, as a Jew, think that Old Testament priests ever took the time to sit down. One time a year, the high priest went into the holy place and passed through and went back behind the curtain. And he went into the Holy of Holies. And he did his business as quickly as possible and offered sacrifice for himself and ordered sacrifice for the people, and he got out. He did not sit down and rest. There were no seats in the tabernacle. None. Why? What's the reason? Well, that's just a fluke. No. It's not a fluke. The work of the priest was never done. It was never perfected in the Old Testament. Never. They couldn't sit down because they were never finished working. They were constantly having to offer sacrifice. They were constantly having to shed the blood of an animal. They were constantly having to go to the Lord and mediate for the people. They were constantly having to do that because they never perfected the work of a priest. They couldn't because they had to offer sacrifice for themselves. Then they offered for the people. And that only sort of lasted until the next sin, right? Which probably occurred before he made his way back out of the tabernacle. It just wouldn't complete. It wouldn't perfect. It wouldn't what Jesus did. But we have a high priest who sat down. How about that? He is through as a priest. That doesn't mean he's not still mediating for us. He certainly is. We read the other week in 1 John where he says, I write these things that no man sins, but if anyone sins, he has an advocate with the Father. So Jesus is still at work. Don't think that he's not still at work. And he isn't always sitting down. You say, whoa. You can't say that. It says he's sitting down. Yeah, but if you turn over and read in Acts chapter 7, you'll find that when Stephen was stoned just before he gave up the ghost, he said, I look up in heaven and I see the Son of Man standing. That ought to give you some encouragement. His work of putting away sin is done. And as far as that's concerned, he's sitting down. But when one of his children needs him, he stands up. Wow! That's heavy! Man, that ought to get you through tomorrow. That ought to get you through any day. Do you think it's important that it says that he sat down? You think that's key? I do. Look over a couple chapters to Hebrews 10. Now, I haven't done this a whole lot. I don't like jumping ahead, and we're not going to deal with this in great depth. But I want you to see just how important it is, because the writer of Hebrews brings it out even more plainly in chapter 10, verse 11. And every priest stands daily at his service. You say, that's no big deal. That's just a word, stands. No, it is specific. He stands daily at his service, offering repeatedly the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. So he has to repeatedly do it. He doesn't have time to sit down. But when Christ had offered for all time a single sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. You believe that it's important that Jesus sat down? I do. I do. The only seat that was in the tabernacle was the mercy seat, and no Jew would ever dare sit at the mercy seat. Now, it says here that Jesus was a minister in the holy places, in the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. Now just think for a moment. What was the Old Testament tabernacle and ultimately the temple? You know, the temple was just a building of the tabernacle, moved around, the temple was set permanently in a place. What did they picture? They weren't real. I mean, they were really built, but they weren't the real thing. Was the mercy seat really the throne of God? No. It merely pictured the throne of God. There were cherubim holding up the mercy seat, right? What's really holding up the throne of God? Cherubim. Look at Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah chapter 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings, and with two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet. With two he flew, and he called to one another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." We could turn over to Ezekiel and see a very similar look at the throne of God as the cherubim or seraphim, as they're called here, different orders of angels, as they actually are there around the throne of God, the real throne, not the mercy seat that was set up in the tabernacle. They're around the real throne of God, where God is actually seated for real. The mercy seat was just a picture of that. Is that not amazing? Well, that's exactly what it's talking about here in Hebrews when it says that Jesus went into the holy places that weren't made with hands. He went into the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. Now, this is not in any way saying that the Old Testament tabernacle was false. It wasn't. God ordained it. That's not the way that the word true is being used here. Let me give you a for instance. When we partake of the Lord's Supper, do we really take the body and blood of Christ? No. We take symbols of the body and the blood of Christ. We take the bread, which pictures the body of Jesus. And we take the wine, which pictures the blood of Jesus. It's just a picture. Jesus is the real thing. So it is with the Old Testament tabernacle. It wasn't the real throne of God back there behind the holy place. It was just a picture. But Jesus didn't go into that temple and offer His blood. He went into heaven itself to the real throne that God set up, and He offered His sacrifice there. Now, which sacrifice is better? The one that's offered on the real throne or the one that's offered on the copy? That's pretty clear. And you see where the writer's going with this? He says that Jesus was a minister in the holy places, in the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. Jesus offered His blood in the true, the actual temple. The Aaronic and Levitical priests offered sacrifices merely in the representation of the real one. It doesn't take much instruction of this verse to show that the work of Jesus was far superior to that of anything that ever occurred in the copy in the tabernacle, since He went to heaven itself, to the real thing. That shouldn't be hard. Now, the law required the high priest to offer gifts and sacrifices. It says in verse 3, "For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifice. Thus it is necessary for this priest, Jesus, also to have something to offer." Certainly, the blood sacrifice for sins was a one-time occurrence, never to be repeated, but it certainly was offered. And Jesus still yet today mediates between God and man. We pray in His name. We gather in His name. We worship in His name. We can only approach God through Him. He still mediates. If you sin today, you have an advocate with the Father. It's not as though Jesus is stopped being a priest. He is still very much a priest. It is just that the sacrifice for sins was a one-time thing, never to be repeated. He's still a priest. A real, actual priest. He's not just like a priest. He is a priest. In fact, He is the priest. The only one that ever actually perfected the priesthood. Now, Jesus would not be allowed to be a high priest on earth. He was not qualified. You say, wait a minute. How can you even say that? Because the law said it had to be of the tribe of Levi. That's the law. And Jesus was born under the law and subject to what it said. And therefore, He could not walk into the temple and take over as priest because He was of the tribe of Judah, not Levi. You say, well, how does it work? He's already spent a whole chapter explaining how that thing worked. The tribe of Levi was never meant to fulfill or perfect the office of the priest. The order of Melchizedek is the one that was supposed to perfect that. And Jesus came in that order. Never was He meant to be of the tribe of Levi. Never. He perfected the priest perfectly. And then it says here in the fifth verse, the priests on earth serve a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things. A copy. Now, if you buy something that is a copy, it may sort of work okay, or it may not. It's not the real thing, though. If you cast a shadow, it's far from the real thing. How much can you really learn from a shadow? Not nearly as much as you learn from the actual. If somebody casts a shadow, you may can sort of make out that it's a human and not a, you know, an animal or something like that. But as far as their actual physical features, the color of their hair, things like that, you can't see that in a shadow. You only get a very dark picture, a dim picture of things in a shadow. It's the actual That really tells you about the shadow, isn't it? Guys, how would you like to go around and pick your future wife based on a shadow of her? I wouldn't. Shadow doesn't tell you a whole lot. The real thing is what you want to see. I guarantee you, ladies, if I said, we're going to pick your next husband, not that anybody's getting divorced or anybody's going to die, but we're going to pick your husband, you single girls, based on a shadow, you're going to say, I want to see the real thing. Well, how about, do you want the shadow of the priesthood? That's the earthly priest. Or do you want the real thing? That's Christ. You see, the earthly priests were merely a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things. And when God spoke to Moses, He said, see that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. It's a pattern fashioned after the real throne of God and the real place that Jesus took His blood and offered it. That is what the one on earth pictured. But it wasn't the real. Therefore, it wasn't as good. It wasn't as good. Now, it says that Jesus is certainly a mediator for us. It says in verse 6, but as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is as much more excellent than the old as the covenant He mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. A mediator is one that interposes between two parties at variance for the purpose of reconciling them. All religions, just about, have priests. I mean, of some sort. They may or may not call them priests, but they have some type of leader that they believe that will stand between you and God. I mean, Buddhism has priests. And they do, in fact, represent men. Men send them forth to represent them. Does it work? No. How come? Well, they don't represent God. They may represent the men, but they don't represent God. That throws a real problem in that priest. He is surely representing the man, because the man has told him, I want you to represent me. The problem is he's not representing God's side. He's not standing between God and man. He's just standing for the man. That won't work. A mediator has got to stand between both. He's got to stand between God and the man. Now, Jewish mediators or priests weren't false in the sense that pagan priests are, because God instituted those human priests. However, they are not true mediators either, since they were only ministering in the copies of the true tabernacle. They couldn't really mediate between God and man because they weren't in the place they needed to be to mediate between God and man. To mediate between God and man, you got to go into the real tabernacle and offer sacrifices there. They were stuck down here on earth doing it in the copies. And that never worked. Somebody had to go in the real thing. And that's what Jesus did. Only Christianity, only in Christ do we have a priest who represents both God and man and actually reconciles them. And that's Jesus. Then he goes on and says, but as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is much more excellent than the old, as the covenant He mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. Now, we are not going to cover this really today. We're going to cover this verse, but we're not going to cover all the promises because they are actually dealt with in the next passage. Jeremiah is quoted at length in verses 8 through 12. Where God promises, you just read verse 8, it'll cause you to remember, for He finds fault with them, that's the old covenant, when He says, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. And what are the promises? Look at verse 12. For I will be merciful toward their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more. Did that happen in the law? No. In fact, in the law, there is a remembrance of sins. The law actually causes you to remember sins. There is a reminder of sins every year when the priest went into the Holy of Holies. You're being reminded that you're a sinner. Not in the New Covenant. In the New Covenant, there's not a reminder, for God says, I will remember their sins no more. Which is the better promise? Clearly, the New Covenant is the better promise. Then he says in verse 7, for if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. Without question, there must have been fault with the first covenant, or there would have been no reason for the new covenant. There is a new covenant which is, you know, plain that there is an old covenant. The old covenant is gone. And we now live in the new covenant. You say, well, where was the fault? The fault was in the people that the covenant was given to. The fault wasn't necessarily with the covenant. But you need to understand that the old covenant was never intended to save. It was a copy when it was erected. It was never the real thing. And it was never meant to be the real thing. When the tabernacle was erected, it was meant to show the real tabernacle in heaven. It was a representation from day one. God never intended to save through the old covenant. The old covenant pointed forth to the new covenant, just like the Lord's Supper points back to the death of Christ. Same type principle there. Moses was given that instruction to build the tabernacle. He was told, see that you make everything according to the pattern. Even at this time, what Moses built merely represented the true temple of God in heaven. The new covenant was God's design for salvation the whole time. And the old covenant was just meant to point forth to the new covenant. Why did they not know that? Springboarding off this morning's message, they just didn't believe. Because God told them. Jeremiah 31 didn't appear in Hebrews. It appeared in Jeremiah. In their Bible, they need only to have read it. And they would have been looking for something better. But they weren't. They were satisfied in the old covenant. And the whole time God was saying, no, no, no. There's a better priest coming after the order of Melchizedek, and there's a better covenant coming that I'm gonna make with the house of Israel and Judah, and I'm gonna put sins away completely in that covenant. This covenant here is just reminding you of sins. In the new covenant, sins are gone. And you know what they were saying? We'll just take the old covenant. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, have you lost your mind? Why? The type and the shadow, that is that old tabernacle, has now been replaced by the real and actual. Don't you want the real and the actual? I mean, if I go to the mountains and I bring you a bunch of pictures of everything that we did from the Dixie Stampede to Dollywood, and I show you the pictures, do you then feel like you've been? But if I take you with me, if I get you in the car and I drive you up there and you actually go, then you feel like you've been, right? Why did they want just the picture when Christ is the substance? It makes no sense. stand, if you will. Darrell, will you dismiss us, sir?